and welcome to this week's Expert HR podcast with me, Ellie Gelder. This week, we're discussing the sensitive topic of substance misuse and how employers can deal effectively with employees who are experiencing issues with drugs or alcohol. I'm now joined by Expert HR Employment Law Editor Chin Mu, who's going to talk us through the key role that line managers have, the fact that employers have a legal obligation to ensure the health and safety of its workers, and of course the use of drug and alcohol testing. We'll also be taking a look at how the Employment Tribunal has dealt with these sorts of cases. But first then, Chin, can we start with the approach that drug and alcohol misuse in the workplace is an employee wellbeing issue?
That's a really good starting point, Ellie. From an organization's perspective, alcohol-related sickness absence costs employers about £1.7 billion per year.
So a significant amount then, and we know from our own research that this is quite a big concern for some employers.
Right. In Expert HR's most recent long-term sickness absence survey, 14% of employers even said that drink or drug-related conditions were the most common cause of long-term absences.
And so just in terms of time lost then, drug and alcohol-related issues have a significant impact.
Right. And even in terms of knock-on effects, what we see is that excessive alcohol consumption reduces employee performance, damages customer relations, and leads to poor morale where other team members have to cover for their colleagues.
It's a sensitive area though, isn't it? I can see how some managers might not be quite comfortable talking to their workers about the issue, and indeed how some employees may not want to broach the issue with their colleagues.
It's not an easy conversation to have. That's why it's important for an organization to have a drug and alcohol strategy, which includes raising awareness about individual and organizational consequences of drug and alcohol misuse.
Okay, so say I'm an employer and an employee comes to me looking for assistance with drugs or alcohol problems. What are the steps that I need to take?
Well, first, make sure your staff know where to go for support. Often the initial point of contact will be line managers. So train your line managers to recognize the signs of drug and alcohol misuse and to handle these initial discussions.
Okay, so provided I've put into place that training, what should I do next?
Well, you'll want to reassure the employee that all discussions about drug and alcohol issues will take place in confidence. Then, provide support by, for example, authorizing the employee to be off on sickness absence, referring him or her to the occupational health team, or offering flexibility with his or her role or working hours. Where a situation is quite complex, you can also bring in specialists to help.
Okay, so we've been discussing the employee wellbeing approach as a strategic initiative, but there are also strong legal reasons behind taking this approach, aren't there?
Absolutely. Employers have a duty of care to ensure the health and safety of their workers. Having a drug and alcohol strategy as a preventative measure can be part of that duty. Also, under the Equality Act 2010, medical and health issues arising from a dependency may count as a disability.
Which means that an employer may have a legal obligation to respond to an employee's health needs by providing reasonable adjustments.
Exactly. Another consideration is that if an employer dismisses an employee for drug or alcohol misuse without first making efforts to support the employee, a tribunal could find that the dismissal was unfair.
Okay, so let's move on to the enforcement aspect of a drug and alcohol program. So can you just tell us about instances where it's acceptable to test for drugs or alcohol?
Sure. Employers can justify testing for drugs or alcohol in a safety-critical environment. This would be the case, for example, where a worker's role involves operating heavy machinery, such as in construction or transportation, or performing public services with a safety element, such as patient care in a hospital.
Okay, but what if there aren't actually any health and safety requirements in a worker's role?
Well, in other situations, employers may have justification to test, but these situations will be quite rare given the invasive nature of testing.
Okay, so provided that it is justifiable to test, what are the steps for me as an employer to go about implementing that testing in the workplace? So whether that's random testing, regular testing, or for cause testing.
So first off, you want to set out the right to require testing in your employment contracts and in a workplace policy. You should also include the justification for testing in these documents. Next, make sure you specify the consequences for refusing or failing a test. Usually, it will be a disciplinary matter. And then, you want to implement a fair and robust process for testing and determining results.
And I understand that many employers hire third parties to process their tests for them, so understandably few employers are going to have the expertise in-house to accurately conduct tests and interpret results.
Yes, that's right.
Okay, so let's just go back to the practicalities of testing. So what do you need to be aware of when conducting these tests?
When you're conducting a test, you should obtain employee consent each time and follow strict data protection requirements. This is, of course, because of the sensitive nature of the data collected. The last thing to remember is to make sure that you apply the policy fairly across the testing group, so to make sure you're not favoring any groups of employees over others.
Okay, so with that framework in mind then, let's look at some of the cases on drug and alcohol misuse in the workplace. So our first case is Bales and First Bristol Limited, where the employee was a bus driver who tested positive for traces of cocaine. The employer wasn't actually convinced of the employee's use of drugs, but it dismissed him on the basis that he'd failed the drugs test, and there was no innocent explanation for the result of the test.
Right. So the issue at tribunal was whether the employer had conducted a reasonable investigation in the circumstances. The tribunal found that the employer didn't properly investigate the possibility that the test was contaminated because the claimant handled large amounts of cash which likely had traces of cocaine on it.
Okay, but that seems quite speculative.
Actually, the tribunal accepted that banknotes in the UK can commonly be contaminated with cocaine and that the employer knew this. The key is that the employer didn't look into whether cocaine on cash could have triggered a false positive test result. For failing to properly investigate, the tribunal awarded the claimant a 20% uplift in compensation.
So, a costly reminder, then, that a drugs test is only one piece of an investigation, and that an employer still has to consider all the circumstances of a case.
Exactly.
Okay, so let's turn then now to a more recent case of Dyson and Asda Stores Limited. This was where the claimant was a warehouse manager with an exemplary record, and who also had responsibility for enforcing the company's drug and alcohol testing policy.
Right. The employer had received an anonymous tip that the claimant misused drugs. The tip was discredited, but it raised a reasonable suspicion of drug use. So the employer required Mr. Dyson to take the test, and when he refused as a matter of pride, he was dismissed for misconduct.
And what did the employment tribunal think?
The tribunal found that the dismissal was within a range of reasonable responses. It said that many large employers would have done the same.
So, members of management are equally subject to testing where there's a reasonable suspicion of drug use, then?
Yes, the tribunal put a lot of weight on the claimant's role in enforcing the drug test policy and being seen to enforce the policy. So it was only fair that where a reasonable suspicion was raised, he would have to be tested as well. The tribunal also emphasized the safety-critical environment of the warehouse.
Okay, and our final case is McElroy and Cambridge Community Services NHS Trust, which involves a familiar scenario. So here an NHS healthcare assistant came to work smelling of alcohol, but apart from the smell of alcohol, there were no concerns about the employee's behaviour at work. The employee was referred to occupational health, who cleared him to return to work. However, the employer decided that the claimant was unfit for work and decided to dismiss him for gross misconduct.
Right. So under the trust's policy, being unfit for work meant being incapable of functioning effectively at work. So here, there was actually no evidence of this, and the tribunal found that it was unreasonable for the employer to make this assumption.
So we can see there, then, the importance of following your own substance misuse policy and not making assumptions without having the supporting evidence.
Exactly. The tribunal suggested that a warning would have been more appropriate in this situation, with future incidents leading to further disciplinary action.
Thanks, Chin. So just to wrap up, we've talked about two approaches to drug and alcohol misuse in the workplace today. So first of all, the employee well-being approach, and secondly, the enforcement approach, so testing. So how should an employer use these two approaches if it's faced with an incident?
So if there's been an employee incident that may be drug or alcohol related, investigate the matter in the usual course, but with sensitivity to a potential drug or alcohol dependency. Following investigation, you might agree a course of counseling or treatment with the employee and provide an initial warning or disciplinary suspension. You can also agree to suspend disciplinary action if the employee goes through a course of treatment. These would be good ways of supporting employees through the process.
And the approach would, of course, depend on the specific concerns at hand and the nature of the workplace.
Yes. The key is that dismissal should be considered a last resort when workplace health interventions have been unsuccessful. And of course, termination should only take place after a full investigation has been conducted.
Thanks, Chin. Some really good practical guidance there. And if you want to learn more about the cases that we've just discussed, you can find them in our Law Reports tool. And if you'd like further information about drug and alcohol testing or how to provide a supportive environment for employees with substance dependency issues, then have a look at our how-to guides or our good practice manuals. You'll find all these resources if you go to our homepage and click on the tools drop-down menu. And that brings us to the end of this week's Expert HR podcast, which you've been listening to with me, Ellie Gelder. We'll be back next Friday, but until then, it's goodbye from us.